So we're discussing the fourth ray of Bhagavat Arka Marichimala, the science of Krishna's characteristics, Bhagavat Tattva. So this is this whole chapter is describing the position of Krishna, his identity, and how the demigods are all under his control. Describes Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, different incarnations. So now we're going through those different points. So this verse from the Shrutis, personified Vedas, 10th canto, chapter 87, verse 28. This is, they're explaining, the Shrutis personified are explaining how Krishna doesn't depend on anyone. Tamakarana swarad akila karaka shakti daras tavabalim udvahanti samadant yajayani nimisha. Varshabuja kila shiti pate riva vishwa shrijo viradati jatra ye tvadikrita bhavatash chakita. O Lord, you need not depend on anyone to carry out your mission, because with your internal potency you are supremely independent and possess the power to accomplish anything and everything. Under the shelter of your illusory energy, Maya, the demigods carry out your orders. As a controller of a province follows the orders of the king, the demigods headed by Brahma who are controllers and creators of the different planets always respect you with awe and reverence. Now this verse, the Shrutis are establishing the supremacy of Bhagavan Sri Krishna. Although most people, they have a view of the demigods, they have some view of Surya and Chandra, they have some view of these and understanding of these demigods. And many times they think they're supreme. They think that Indra supreme or Shiva supreme or one of the other lesser demigods. So the Shrutis, who are actually the original Vedas personified, they are giving their conclusion. So the conclusion of the Shrutis of the whole Vedic literature is that Krishna, he's supreme and he's independent. He doesn't depend on anyone to carry out his mission. Everything is done by his own energies. But the demigods, they depend on Krishna. And you see so many instances, so many pastimes where demigods get in trouble, then they have to go to Vishnu. They have to go to Bhagavan to get bailed out, to get rescued. Like Brahma, and Bhumi, Mother Bhumi, she was being harassed by demoniac kings, and demons were running around on her surface. And so she went to Brahma and said, "Listen, this is your universe, and I'm one planet in your universe. You're four-headed Brahma, and I'm the deity of the earth planet, Dharani, or Bhumi. And my planet's in a mess. It's in bad shape. Can you fix it up?" And he said, "Well, I don't know. These demons are really powerful. I can't really do much. They're beyond me." So even Brahma, with his four heads, he couldn't figure out how to solve the problem of Bhumi. So then he said, "Let's go to Vishnu. Maybe Vishnu can help us out." So even Brahma is dependent on Vishnu. So then he went to Kiradakshai Vishnu Loka. He stood on the beach of the ocean of Kira, and then he meditated on Vishnu. Then in his meditation, he got some message in his brain, some SMS. Message came from Vishnu, a little cell phone, right? So Vishnu was lying on the coils of Ananta Shesh, feet being massaged by Lakshmi, and just relaxing there. And then he got this, he understood the prayer of Brahma, that Brahma was in distress. So he communicated to Brahma, he said, "Don't worry, that I'm going to take one of my incarnations is going to come there and alleviate the situation." So then Bhumi felt relieved. Now there's so many unlimited pastimes showing how the demigods are dependent. They're not independent. Only Krishna is independent. So this verse is telling that. Yesterday we were asking a question, which we discussed 2 days ago, how to study the Bhagavatam. And different answers were given. But the actual answer we were looking for is, if you want to study the Bhagavatam systematically, then this is a study guide. This book has been available for a long time. Now it's available from Ras Bihari. Bhagavat Arka Marichimala. And just as a review, so I understand. Someone says, "How do I study the Bhagavatam? There's all these books, 18 cantos. And all, I went to the temple, they said, you start with the first canto and just start reading. Read the first canto and go all the 9 cantos. And after you finish 9 cantos, you'll be self-realized. And then when you're self-realized, you can be off the bodily platform. and understand the transcendence of God and appreciate the transcendental nature of his activities, which though appearing like human-like, are actually transcendental. So you won't run into the problem of making up a rod or offenses to the Lord. So this is the standard presentation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, 100 years ago, he saw that people were very busy. People were very busy and they were very pressed for time, and they didn't really know how to tackle the Bhagavatam. It seemed like an impossible task to actually complete the Bhagavatam. So he took the 18,000 verses and he summarized them into 1,000 verses, maybe 1,100 verses, into 20 different rays. The chapters are called ray. Arka means light. Arkamrichi means a ray of light, ray of the sun, ark. And then the whole Bhagavatam and all the Vedic literatures is presented in three categories. Sambandha, which means relationship, and then Avideya, working in that relationship, then Prayojan, which means the goal of that relationship. So who is God? Who am I? What is our relationship? He is the master, I am the servant. He is great, I am small. He is the creator, I am created. He is independent, I am dependent. This is Sambandha again, basic. What is the purpose of this world? Self-realization. This is Sambandha again. So then, Abhideya, well, okay, now we established some relationship. Now how do we work out? What are the details of this relationship? Well, I'm the husband, you're the wife. I do this, you do that. There's some details of this service relationship. That's Abhideya, working out the details of the relationship, working together, serving, pleasing the Lord. And what's the goal of the relationship? Well, the goal of a family relationship is mutual happiness or production of children or whatever. Continuing the dynasty and, of course, basic happiness of the individuals. And self-realization, of course, is the real meaning of human life. So the goal of the whole thing is to love God, Krishna Prem. So this is the three categories. So he took the 18,000 verses of the Bhagavatam, put them into 1,000. And divided it into these categories. So now, how do you use this book as a study guide? So you go through this book systematically, and you have all the Bhagavatam stacked up next to you. And he's going through his systematic presentation. First, he establishes the Praman, that the Vedas are the Praman, and the best of the Vedas is the Vedanta Sutra. The commentary of Vedanta Sutra is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srimad Bhagavatam is Amalam Gyanam, Namalam Puranam. It's pure knowledge and pure Purana, because it establishes Krishna. So then he begins the discussion with the fourth ray, which is Bhagavat Tattva. There's Bhagavat Tattva, then Shakti Tattva, Rasa Tattva, Jiva, everything is discussed. So now the way it's set up, each chapter, he's presenting his points, but he's citing different verses from the Bhagavatam, 1,000 different verses, and in a sequence. For example, in the fourth ray, there's like 50 verses, 50 texts cited. One from 10th canto, there's three or four from 10th canto, and then 1st canto, then 9th canto, you're going everywhere. So you read one verse from this text in the translation, and say, well, this verse is about Bhagavat Tattva. So this whole theme of this chapter is Bhagavat Tattva, the science of the Lord's characteristics, right? Or the, you know, like we said yesterday, if you want to imagine what that would be in Sanskrit, it would be, you know, Bhagavat Guna Charitra Vigyan, something like this. The science of the Lord's characteristics. Bhagavan Guna Charitra, because Charitra means characteristics, Charitra. Vigyan means science. So this verse is from 10th canto, 87th chapter, verse 28. So we read this verse, we read the translation. And generally there's no purports, because each verse is connected to the theme. And we say, well, how does this verse relate to the theme? How does this verse describe the characteristics of the Lord? And how does this verse describe Bhagavat Tattva? That's what we had in each one of these verses. Oh, this verse establishes that Bhagavan does not depend on anyone. And how is he independent? Because of his internal potency. That internal potency has the power to do anything and everything. And it's his Swarup Shakti. His personal energy can do anything and everything. And then... So then we study this. And now we open the Bhagavatam, the VBT Bhagavatam. The same verse is there, 10:87:28. And then there's another translation done by different author, different translator. So we read that translation, then we have the word-for-word meaning there. So we go through the word-for-word meaning. Tvam akarana swarad akila karaka shakti daras. Tavabalim Udavanti Samadant. And we look at each verse, we look at each word in the Sanskrit, what does it mean? And we think about that meaning in relation to the translation and relationship to the theme, Bhagavat Tattva. Then we look at the purport. In many cases there's a purport. And we read the purport of the BBT, the Big Fat Bhagavatam. Then we deeply reflect on the meaning of the purport and help and pray that, and we also pray along the line that the Shrutis personified, that they'll reveal this science to us, they'll reveal this knowledge to us, and we pray to the Bhagavatam, and we pray to Shukadeva Goswami. And then, because it's the 10th canto, then we open the Krishna book, Prabhupada's Krishna book, to chapter 87. Then we try to find in the English, because the verses aren't noted there, we try to find in the English this verse 28 in chapter 87. And we see Prabhupada's translation. So now we have three translations to consider. This one of Bhumipati, then a BBT, which is Gopi Pranadana, then Prabhupada's. And then oftentimes you can mark off Prabhupada's translation in the Krishna book with brackets. And after that translation, there's a purport to that verse, although it's not like so much demarcated purport. It's just all flowing. Have you seen Krishna book? It's all English. But you can find the verses there and you find purports. Then you see Prabhupada's purport. So this is how to study the Bhagavatam, very systematically. Then that's one verse. See how rich it becomes. It's like sweet rice, just milk and sugar and rice. Okay, that's nice. Then you add cashews. Then you add kishmish. Then you add lychee. Then you add saffron or whatever. And it's like, oh, something special. And you cook it for 4 hours. It's like nectar, slow heat. So this is the Bhagavatam. It's like sweet rice and then a little kishmish. So this is how. So you study that verse. Then you go to the next verse, which is chapter 85. So this is chapter 87, 10th canto. Now you go to chapter 85, verse 6. So that each verse continues. We're skipping here to get to highlight the different points of the chapter, because we don't want to go through every verse. You can do on your own. But it's a very helpful guide for studying the Bhagavatam systematically and learning the actual, because there's 50 verses here. So these 50 verses, if you study in this way, it'll take you a month or so, or maybe 2 months or whatever. And then you'll get such a rich understanding of the science of the Lord's characteristics. That will increase your faith, that will increase your understanding, and increase your purity, because it's all transcendental knowledge which purifies. Is there any questions on the system? You understand? No.
Start off with this.
Start with this. This is fast, 1,000 verses. You can do, you can do 10 verses a day or 5 verses a day.
Well, then when you complete this, is it as good as reading the whole Bhagavatam?
When you complete this, you'll be in good shape.
Then you can read the Bhagavatam.
then you start the Bhagavatam. First Gita with 11th canto, and then this book, and then start systematically first canto. You'll want to also. It's not like, we have to read the Bhagavatam. It's not like going to college. You finish college and you say, okay, now go back to kindergarten. Oh, I have to go back to kindergarten. It's not like that. It's relishable. It's sweet. It's attractive. It's compelling. You want to read. Because what this book is doing, this Bhagavat Arkam Richimala, this is presenting the guts of the Bhagavatam. This is like dissecting the Bhagavatam. But this is the philosophical overview of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the basis of all religious philosophy, is Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojan. So it's taking the Bhagavatam. See, the Bhagavatam supports these three categories of knowledge, explains these very thoroughly, and you can understand it. Then you go back to the Bhagavatam and relish the stories. The stories and the devotees, because the Bhagavatam is a wonderful stories of Krishna and his devotees, the Bhagavats. So the story of Narada Muni, because you won't get that here. You're only getting the philosophy here. You're getting the guts. You're not getting, the actual stories. The story of Narada Muni, the story of Kapila and Devahuti, because there's so much ras. This is a philosophy, but there's no ras here. But when you read the stories, and there's a Nayak and Nayaka, there's Kunti, and then there's the Pandavas, and there's the prayers of Queen Kunti, and why she prayed like that, and the house of Lek got burned down, and you get into the whole story. It's so much rich. Not only philosophy is there, but so much ras, which satisfies the heart. This philosophy satisfies the mind and increases faith, gives a foundation, gives faith, knowledge, strong footing, satisfies the mind. If you want to satisfy the heart, then you have to enter the heart of the Bhagavatam, which is the stories. the stories and the rasas being exchanged. What is Kunti's ras with Krishna? Her ras is like Vatsalya. It's like a mother. And then so that then you read all the stories. So this it's a endless engagement. So now this is the next point. Is that clear? Is that clear? So you have to buy the Bhagavatam. You should have bought it long ago. You have a TV? Yes? Ben? How can you can live without you can't live without a TV, so how can a Vaishnava live without the Bhagavatam? Right? Beg the Bhagavatam, steal it, borrow it, somehow get it. Go to Braj Mohan's house and steal it.
I'll get you one.
This is a big daddy here. You can take a loan from him and buy one. And they have different editions. They have the big fat ones, which are kind of, but they also have little ones also. And little ones are cute and they're cheap, but the print's smaller. So if you have good eyes, then you can get the small one. They're little. They're this big. It's like how it's like this big, right? It's like this. This is how big it is. This is how tall it is. It's a little wider. Those little black ones. And they're cheaper also, isn't it? Like 2,000 rupees or something. Something like that, 2,100. For the whole 12 cantos are there.
So it's like the same,
Yeah, yeah.
The big book is in one small book, but there are more books.
No, this book, like this, there's 30 of these.
Exactly.
There's 30 of these. I think so. And then the big one is 18. This thing has like there's about 5 volumes of this in 10th canto.
Yeah.
And they did a very interesting thing because the Rasa dance is in one volume.
Yeah.
29 through 33. It's all in one little volume. Did you see that? It's purple in color, blue. It's like this. It's all. It's really, it's a hardbound book, but it's only this thick. Next text. Vasudev spoke to Lord Krishna and Balaram in the 10th canto, chapter 85, verse 6, as follows. Pranadinam vishwasrijam shakta yohya parasyata paratantra vaisadrishya dvayoscheshtatam. O Supreme Lord. So this is the father, this is the father speaking to the son. Because Vasudev and Mathura, he knew that his son was God. So he was in so much awe and reverence. His parental love, his Vatsalya mood of parental love or fatherly love was mixed with so much respect and majesty, and he was sometimes he'd be folding his hands like this. This is what he's doing. He's folding his hands. Oh, my son. Now his son, how old is his son? It's a 10-year-old boy standing in front of him. And Vasudeva is like 60 years old. And he said, oh, my Supreme Lord. And the kids are, I'm the Supreme Lord? You know. O Supreme Lord, you are the source of the living force of the great creators like Brahma. They are dependent. You are the master. They are the servants. Therefore, there is no similarity between you and them. Since all the endeavors of the demigods are dependent on you, all their activities are carried out only by your will. So this is the great difference between Yashoda and Nanda's love in Vrindavan for their Krishna and the Vasudeva's love for the same Krishna. You never find one incident where Yashoda is ever praying, never standing with folded hands and say, oh Nanda Nanda, no Yashoda Nanda, oh Damodar. She says, hey you rascal, she's pulling his ear and slapping him, chasing him with a stick. Sit down. What is this? She's never doing it. Oh, you are the Supreme Lord, all the demigods. Not possible. It's Madhurya Mayi Vatsalya. The Vatsalya, the parental love of Mother Yashoda is filled with sweetness. There's not a drop of opulence or majesty or any Vaikuntha mood over there. It's totally the intimacy and sweetness of Braj. So there are many, many verses here to develop this theme of how the demigods are under the control of the Supreme Lord. Now he develops, Bhaktivinoda Thakur develops the theme to bring out the next point about Bhagavat Tattva, or about Krishna's characteristics of the Supreme Lord. He says the Supreme Lord is full of transcendental qualities. So this is Dharani spoke to Dharma. Mother Dharani means Mother Earth. She spoke to Dharma in the first canto, chapter 16, 26 to 29, explaining the qualities of the Lord. Satyam shocham daya shantis tyaga santosha arjavam shamodamas tapasamyam. Tatiksho pariti shutam Gyanam Virakti Raishvaryam Shauryam Tejo Balam Smriti Swatantriyam Koshalam Kantir Dharyam Ardavam Evacha Pragabhyam Prashraya Shilam Sahajo Balam Bhaga Gambiryam Stairyam Ashtikyam Kirtir Mano Ahankriti. Mother Earth told Dharma. Dharma means the personification, religion. There are two kinds of qualities. Material qualities, which are full of faults, and transcendental qualities, which are faultless. The transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are as follows. Truthfulness, cleanliness, compassion, forgiveness, detachment, self-satisfaction, simplicity, peacefulness, self-control, responsibility, equality, tolerance, equanimity, knowledge, renunciation, opulence, leadership, prowess, strength, remembrance, independence, expertise, beauty, patience, ingenuity, soberness, magnanimity, determination, perfection, all knowledge, gravity, steadiness, righteousness, fame, and pridelessness. Interesting. After that whole list, the last one is pridelessness. He's heavily endowed with all these transcendental qualities, and by the way, he's prideless. He has everything, all cause and reason to be proud. He's beautiful. You can be proud of your beauty. He's strong. Be proud of your strength. He's full of knowledge. Be proud of your knowledge. But there's no pride anywhere in Krishna. Pridelessness. All these and unlimited other qualities are fully present in the Supreme Lord. Bhagavan Sri Krishna ki
jai.
So one more. Dharani's continuing. So we have to somehow broadcast the glories of Krishna and the pastimes of Krishna so people come to know about all these wonderful qualities. Ete chanye cha bhagavan nitya jatra mahaguna pratya mahatvam ichchadbir navayanti smakarichit. This is 1.16.29. Dharani's continuing to talk to Dharma. Like these, there are many other transcendental qualities found in the Supreme Lord. Those who desire to become great also possess some of these qualities. The qualities are never separated from the Supreme Lord. The purport is that the Lord is just like the spiritual sun. All spiritual qualities are present in Him in full form. Some of these qualities are found in minute quantity in the living entities, beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant insect. So you can find qualities of God even in a bug. These qualities are enhanced and developed by the power of devotional service and bhakti prabhav. So whatever qualities we may have, they become increased and developed by devotion. So this, the development of the theme, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's explaining this, the Bhagavat Tattva. So first he began the chapter by saying, Vedanti Tattva Vidas Yattaj Jnanam Advayam Brahmati Paramatmati Bhagavanati Shabyate. The Supreme Lord, the Absolute Truth, is known in three features: Brahman, Paramatman, and Bhagavan. And then he starts to explain Bhagavan. And Bhagavan is independent, that all the demigods, which we are pretty much aware of, or some people are aware of, they're also dependent on the Lord. And so now, so we're establishing his position, how powerful he is, how he's independent. Now we're saying that the Lord, he has qualities, so he's not nirgun. Because the Mayavadi viewpoint, or those that only understand God or Absolute Truth as Brahman, they say that this Brahman is nirgun. Nirgun means no qualities, without, devoid of qualities. There's no qualities. But that's the lower conception of Godhead. Higher than that is Paramatma, and highest is Bhagavan. So when one comes to the Bhagavan conception, this is Bhagavat Tattva, the truth of Bhagavan. Bhagavat Tattva, in this fourth ray, then one understands that the Lord has qualities. What kind of qualities? Transcendental qualities, divya gun, not this material prakriti gun, material qualities, but he has divya gun, transcendental qualities. So then they're mentioned here. It's called sagun Brahma, Brahma with qualities, not Brahma without qualities. So he's a person and he has qualities, and then he's citing. He can just say that I'm saying this, but no, Mother Bhumi is saying this to Dharma. So he's saying the Bhagavatam is explaining this point about Krishna's qualities. And many other verses describe Krishna's qualities. And then he develops a theme that Bhagavan, he not only has independent power, and all the demigods are simply serving as his parts and parcels, and he has transcendental qualities, he's a person, but he also has an abode. Because part of Bhagavan Tattva is also to understand Dham, the holy Dham, the spiritual abode. So there's the material creation which we're stuck in, and there's the spiritual dimension which we're aspiring for, or at least intelligent, pious, religious people try to aspire for elevation or improvement to go to the spiritual world. So then he starts to explain about this. What is this material creation, and what about the spiritual world? So he cites a verse from 2nd Canto, chapter 6, verse 19. Pareshu sarva bhutani pumsastiti pado vidu amritam shemam abhayam shri murdino tayi murdasu. The Supreme Lord is a reservoir of the one-fourth of His opulence known as material energy, in which the living entities reside. Three-fourths of the Lord's Aishwarya, or opulence, are known as deathlessness, fearlessness, and freedom from anxiety. That is the kingdom of the Lord. This material creation, consisting of the 14 worlds, Bhurvavasva, is His material opulence. The above-mentioned three-fourths opulence is His spiritual opulence. So here in this verse, I'm not sure who's speaking, maybe Suta Goswami can't say without having the text in front of us, but they're saying that there's Ekpad Vibhuti and Tripad Vibhuti. Vibhuti means opulence, or you can say wealth or opulence. So Ekpad Vibhuti means one step or one portion. Pad means step or portion, like a shloka is called pad, Ardhapad, Ekpad. Line of a shloka is called a pada. So Ekpad Vibhuti means one fourth or one step, because there's ek do teen, char. Tripad and Ekpad. So Ekpad is the material world. This Prakriti is called Ekpad Vibhuti. This Aishwarya, this opulence of the material world, this whole material creation with all its millions of planets, is only one fourth of the Lord's Vibhuti. One step. Ekpad Vibhuti. Where's the rest of it? The rest of it is called Tripad Vibhuti. This is in the spiritual world. That's where the three steps. So this is this whole material creation, which is vast and unlimited. I mean, try to think about it. Are you thinking? If you take a bag of mustard seeds, 100 kilos of mustard seeds, how many mustard seeds in there?
Uncountable.
Millions. Oh, that's how many planets there are in this one universe. Now, if you take another bag of mustard seeds, 100 kilos, and there's so many mustard seeds, and that's how many universes there are.
Planets?
Yeah, in other words, there's unlimited planets in this one universe, and there's unlimited universes with unlimited planets. You follow? You take one bag, that's how many planets are in this one universe. You got it? Millions of mustard seeds. Billions. Now you take another bag of 100 kilos, and how many seeds? That's how many universes there are also. So in other words, it's unlimited. And now what is that? What is all that? One-fourth of the Vibhuti, Ekpad Vibhuti. And what is that? What is the analogy they use? They have the vast firmament of the sky, the beautiful blue sky. And in some corner, you see, you're sitting there out in the forest, lying in a field somewhere enjoying or counting, whatever. And it's all clear sky. And then you see some corner, little black cloud. Little cloud. It's so insignificant compared to the whole vast sky. This little cloud. And then that cloud is the whole, all the material creation with all those millions and millions of universes. And the rest of the sky is the spiritual sky. Paravyom. Prabhupada translate. In Sanskrit, we say para vyom. Vyom means sky or air. And then para means other, transcendental, or bigger, higher, beyond. So Prabhupada translated para vyom, very beautiful translation, spiritual sky. When I first joined, ISKCON had an incense company called Spiritual Sky Incense. And the devotees, it was in Culver City, it was nearby the temple. All the devotees worked there. They could always tell who worked in the incense company because they had different colored arms. Because they were always dipping the incense sticks in the dye, And they're supposed to wear red rubber gloves, which sometimes they forget. So someone had purple arms and red arms and green arms. When they put in strawberry incense, they have pink arms. And so they look really funny, you know. White skin with a purple, you know, purple and night queen incense, raspberry and strawberry and vanilla.
What's
I don't know. Can't say. I mean, I haven't been there in 20 years, so what am I going to... That's 14. And there's 14 means 14 planets. Janalok, it's like it goes Burlok, Bulok, Burlok, Bur, Bhuvaswa. That's three, Swargaloka. Then above that is Janalok, then Maharlok, Tapalok, Satyalok. That's seven planets. And besides that, there's 5 billion planets. Does everyone agree Earth is a planet? Do you agree?
Yes, Maharaj, I agree.
You sure?
Yes, Maharaj.
Is the sun a planet? You agree?
Yes, Maharaj.
The moon is a planet?
Yes, Bhuvan.
Okay, and how many planets in the chart, the astrology, how many planets? Nine. That's all the planets there are, right? No, those nine plus 9 billion others, that's how many planets are in this universe. You follow? You don't follow? There's nine planets. 1, 2, 3, 9. So you know those nine.
Yes.
But do you know the other 5 billion planets out there? No, you don't know. But they're there.
In this universe.
Ding dong. You follow? There's millions and millions of planets in this one universe. We only know nine of them. Have you been to, you know about Janaloka, Maharaloka? You only by scripture you can read. That's Aloka means a planet.
The scripture does not name the other planets? Like how they say these 14 planets?
It takes you high 500 books to just write the names. If they just write the name, it'd take you, you know, 50,000 books. The big guys. Like demigods, there's 33 crore demigods. Do you know the names? What's the name of the demigod in control of the ass?
I don't remember.
You don't remember, see? Like half of your life is useless. So the anal sphincter, which is your poop muscle. Anal sphincter, there's a demigod controlling that. We pray to him a lot. And then there's a demigod controlling the eyelids. And he's very active right now. Your eyelids are out of control. So all these are different demigods. They're residing in the body, the human body. We don't know very much. That's the whole point. What do we know? We know nine planets, and we know that we don't even know what's behind our ear.
Yeah. Now they're saying there are 10 planets.
Yeah, and then what happened? Pluto and Uranus?
Yeah, well, everything is nonsense.
Uranus is no more Uranus. It's Uranus. It's nowhere. It's useless.
Useless.
Pluto?
Yeah.
Popeye? Different planetary systems. Pluto, Popeye, olive oil.
Mach 3, Mach 1, Mach 2.
Yeah, they have names like that. It's quark and this, that. They, you know, black hole. Like they say, oh, there's this universe, and then they have this black hole in space. You must have heard.
Yeah.
And they had some idea. They see some black hole with their electron telescope or something. And that black hole in space, they see there's some drawing power there. That anything gets near that black hole gets sucked in there like a vacuum cleaner. You have a vacuum cleaner, and then it's sucking the air, and anything gets near, shoop, goes. So that hole, there's some kind of, they say it's black hole in space. So they have all kinds of theories about it. They say this black hole is a tunnel to another universe, and then it's sucking in all this energy. You can see stars get sucked over there. Yeah, they don't know what's going on. So the Vedas give pretty much the overview of the main thing. Huh? What about chakras? Yeah. Yeah, well, the chakras are like seven planets in the body. There's seven chakras in the body.
Like Dhruva Loka would be considered as one more planet.
Yes.
Well, we can see
Rasatala, Atala, Patala, these are seven lower planetaries.
Guruma, Dhruva planet is the only heavenly planet which can be seen from the material world, Mahat. I read
somewhere. Yeah, they call it the pole star.
Yes, Guru Maharaj.
It's like
Vaikuntha planet we can see from the material world.
Yeah, it's like that. Because there's a Vaikuntha planet in this world. It's called Shirdakshay Vishnu Loka. Shirdakshay Loka. We're talking about Vaikuntha. So you understand that this material creation is pretty significant. Insignificant. So this is 2.5.14. Dravyam karma chakalascha sabhavo jiva evacha vasudevat paro brahman achanyorta stitatvata. The material elements, action, time, nature, and the living entities are the five essential objects which are not actually separate from the Supreme Lord Vasudev. So prakriti, then karma, time, or the dravya, the karma, kalash, living entities. The living entities are born from Lord Vasudev's marginal potency, and the other four objects are born from his external energy or maya. The energy is not separate from the energetic. It's like heat and light are born from fire. So in one sense they're not fire, but in another sense they are, because they can't separate them. The living entities are connected to the Lord. I'll read this one more verse. This is 1.11.38. Etad ishanam ishasya prakritisto pitad gane nadyujate sadatmaster yata buddhis tadashraya. The living entities are controlled, and Krishna is the controller. The supremacy of the Lord is that even though he enters within the material world, he is unaffected by the material qualities. He is always situated in his supreme transcendental position. Even living entities who are fully surrendered to Krishna are also transcendentally situated. So he's explaining now that he's the source of the living entities, but they are also controlled, just like Krishna controls the demigods, he also controls the individual living entities. And the Lord comes to this world because he's establishing that the spiritual world is there, it's three-fourths of creation, the material world is there, it's one-fourth of creation. And in this one-fourth of creation, the Lord has manifested the living entities, but they're also controlled by the Lord. But then the Lord enters into this material creation. Although it's a material creation, when the Lord comes, he's not affected by material qualities. He still maintains his transcendental qualities and his transcendental identity. At that point, he wants to establish. So this is, now he's talking about the jivas in the material world. But if they become, so the Lord is unaffected by material qualities, and some living entity who's in this material world, if he fully surrenders to the Lord, he's also transcendentally situated. Then Brahma says in third canto, chapter 15, verse 14, as follows. Vasanti yatra purushaha sarve vaikuntha murtaya ye nimitta nimitena dharma nararadayam harim. All the inhabitants of the spiritual abode of the Lord are fully spiritual. They're completely transcendental. They eternally worship Lord Hari with love and devotion without any motive. They simply scratch his back. All the living entities scratch Vishnu's back, and they don't expect him to scratch their back in return. There's no motive. Ahoituki apratiyata. So now he explains, he's talked a little bit about the material world and living entities, now the spiritual world. And then he starts to talk about Krishna Loka. So now there's some discussion about the spiritual abode. And there's desire trees there. And the forests are decorated with various seasons. It's very, very beautiful. So we selected a couple of verses. This is from the 10th canto, chapter 28, verse 13 and 14, where Krishna shows Goloka to the coward boys. Janavai loka etasmin avidya kama karma bi ucha va chasu gatishu navedasvam gatim brahman. Now the abode of Krishna is being described. This is Krishna Loka. One day Krishna thought, some of my coward boyfriends have come from Vaikuntha. They may be in anxiety on seeing the distress of living entities. Under the influence of ignorance, the living entities engage in fruitive activities in this world. They take birth in the higher and lower species of life because they're not knowing the ultimate goal. Can we also allow these coward boys who became perfect on account of their sadhana to remain like this? Iti sanchintya Bhagavan Mahakaruniko Hari Darshayam Asalokam Swam Kupanam Tapasaparam. Thinking in this way, the Lord mercifully displayed His own eternal abode, Goloka, which is situated beyond the material creation, to those coward boys who had attained perfection through sadhana. So they were wondering. There was one time the coward boys were asking Krishna, "Oh, will we go to the spiritual world?" They're already in the spiritual world of Krishna. They said, "You know, we sometimes the rishis, Bhagori Rishi, Shandilya Rishi, Durvasa Muni, they preach that if you live a life very nicely, you'll go to the spiritual world. And they're just coward boys. They're brijvasis, they're milking the cows, running with the cows. And the rishis are saying, yes, you should live a very pious and religious life. Do your Surya Puja, do your Vishnu Puja, Shalagram Puja, and serve the Brahmins. So we're serving the Brahmins, we worship Giriraj and we worship Indra. Will we go to the spiritual world, Krishna, when we die?" So Krishna said, "Yeah, I'll show you." Of course, they're already in. So when they saw everything was the same, that they were there and Krishna was, "Hey, this is the same." It's very nicely described in Ananda Vrindavan Champu this past time also. Now, after describing the spiritual sky and how the material world and how the Lord has so many transcendental qualities, and there's different kinds of living entities. There's living entities stuck in this material world, and there's living entities relishing the Lord's eternal association in Vaikuntha in the spiritual world. And there were some characteristics he gave. The one verse that he mentioned the characteristics of the spiritual world. And that was that one verse. So this is the three fourths. This Tripad Vibhuti, the spiritual world of Vaikuntha, has four characteristics. Three characteristics. Deathlessness, fearlessness, and freedom from anxiety. That's why it's called Vaikuntha. You heard this term, Vaikuntha? Vaikuntha means anxiety. Kunta means kunta. Means anxiety, and vai means without. So there's no anxiety. So what are the causes of anxiety? Death is a good cause of anxiety. It's a big cause of anxiety. And fear is also a cause of anxiety. We're afraid of so many things. Afraid of the tax man. Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai.
So these are the qualities of Vaikuntha. And that's three-fourths of the whole creation of the Lord. All the good guys are there. All the good guys are in the spiritual world. We're in the minority. Minority party, BJP. Yeah, we like it, no doubt. We're happy to be minority. We like death, we like fear, we like old age, we like disease. Now Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains how, okay, there's three quarters of the creations, it's the majority of living entities are in the spiritual world. We're in the whole material world's minority party. Human beings are a minority party. Men and women, we're in a severe minority. The ruling party is 75%. We only have 25% of the vote. We only have 25% of creation in the material world. 75% of the living entities are liberated, mukta jivas, in Vaikuntha. So we're in this deplorable, despicable condition, trapped in ignorance and suffering. Fear. We're full of fearlessness. We're full of fear and full of death and full of anxiety. That's going on down here. Anxiety, fear, and death. And up there, what is it? Fearlessness, deathlessness, and freedom from anxiety. So what to do? They're there and we're here. So is the majority party going to favor us? Are they going to give some mercy to the scheduled class? We're the scheduled class. We're all in the scheduled class, right? Scheduled class means lower class. We're in the lower regions. We're suffering. We're deprived. So then, will the Lord leave us to our ways? No. Lord is very merciful. So then He comes as different incarnations. Incarnation, avatar, that which descends. Actually, the word is descend. It descends. The Lord descends from Paravyom, from the spiritual sky. He comes into this world to give us a chance to join a majority party. But Krishna is canvassing on behalf of Congress I. Congress V, Vrindavan Party.
ISKCON.
Ah, yeah, Congress I, ISKCON. Congress. Congress means to come together. Congress.
Congregation.
Congregational. Chanting, hearing and chanting. Sankirtan movement. It's a Congress party. Congregational party. Or Chaitanya Sankirtan party is Congress. So then he explains how the Lord comes in 23 different incarnations of the Supreme Lord. So just see how many times the Lord comes to try to help us out. Once and twice and thrice. Doesn't he comes once and says, look, come on everybody, join the party. A lot of benefits in my party. Deathlessness, fearlessness, freedom from anxiety. Come on, sign up. Follow the quest. Seek the quest. Seek and you shall receive. But then we don't listen. Ah, get out of here. I'm busy. My minority program. So the Lord first incarnated, and all these incarnations are told. These 23 incarnations, or let's say 22 incarnations of the Lord, are described in 1st Canto, 3rd chapter, 26 through 28th verse. It is said therein. Seva pratamam deva komaram sargamashita chachara duscharam brahma brahmacharyam akanditam. The Supreme Lord first incarnated as the four kamaras. Being a brahmana, he strictly observed the vow of celibacy. So the four kamaras, they started one Vaishnava party. Hare Krishna. They started one Vaishnava party. One of the Vaishnava sampradayas is called the Kumara Sampradaya. This sampradaya is actually started by Krishna. The four kamaras are Krishna. His incarnation of Krishna. Dvitiyam tu bhava yasya rasatala gatam mahim udarishyan uparata yagyesha sokaram vapu. Once this earth planet was pushed out of its orbit to rasatala, at that time, the Lord of all sacrifices, Yageshwara, assumed the form of a boar to deliver the earth. What was his name? Varaha. He's a second incarnation. Third incarnation is Narada, who compiled the Vaishnava literature, Narada Panchratra, to teach the superiority of devotional service over fruitive activities. The fourth incarnation was the sages Nara Narayan, who was actually Arjuna and Krishna. They underwent severe austerity to control the senses. And Badrinath. And then it goes on all these different incarnations. Kapila, number 5 is Kapila, 6 is Dattatreya, 7 is Yajna, 8 is Rishabhadev, 9th is Prithu, 10th is Matsya, 11th is Korma, 12th is Dhanvantari, 13th is Mohini, and then 14th is Nrisingadev, 15th is Vamanadev, 16th is Parasaram, 17th Vedavyas, 18th Ramachandra, 19th and 20th Balaram and Krishna. Haribo. Krishna Balaram Ki.
Jai.
21st incarnation is Buddha.
Buddha.
Buddha. Buddha. 22nd incarnation is Kalki. Kalki.
He's coming now.
The son of Vishnu Jasha. Now, who is the 23rd incarnation?
Chaitanya.
Oh, very smart. The 23rd incarnation is predicted in the first canto, 3rd chapter, 27th verse. Avataraya sankyeya hare sattva nider dvija yata vidasina kulya sarasa su sahasrasa. O brahmanas headed by Shonaka, as thousands of streams emanate from a vast body of water, similarly innumerable incarnations emanate from the transcendental Lord Hari. I have only described a few of them, 22 to be exact. There are many more. In Kali Yuga, there will be an extraordinary incarnation who will appear in a disguised form. So what is that disguised form? That disguised form is revealed in the 7th canto. This is the 1st canto. Sutta Goswami is telling the sages at the Nimisharanya, oh, Brahmins headed by Shonaka, in the future of this Kali Yuga, because this is the beginning of Kali Yuga, end of Dwapara Yuga, this is Yagya what's going on. In this Kali Yuga, the Lord will appear in a covered incarnation, disguised form. Now, Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto, he reveals, he says, Chana Avatar. Chana Avatar means hidden avatar. Itam Nritrigyag Rishideva. No. Itam Nritiryag. Itam Nritiryag Rishideva. Tushashavatar. Jasha Shavatarir. Lokan Vibhava Yasi Hamsi Jagat Pratipan Dharmam Mahapurusha Pasi Yugan Ritam Chana Kalo Yaravavastra Yuga Tasatvam. Chana Kalo and Kali Yuga, you appear. So Prahlad Maharaj is telling this. When did Prahlad Maharaj speak this verse? When did Prahlad Maharaj, what canto did Prahlad Maharaj speak this verse? So what age was this? Satyuga. So he's talking about a Chana avatar in Satyuga, which is 3 million years ago, right? And then Suta Goswami is talking about a disguised avatar in Kali Yuga. When is that? When did he speak this verse, Suta Goswami?
First canto.
No, when? Time. How many years ago? 5,000 years ago. The end of Dwapara. This Kali Yuga has been running for 5,237 years. Something like that. More than 5,000. So, millions of years ago, Prahlad Maharaj predicted Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's advent, Chanavatar. And then 5,000 years ago, again, it's mentioned in the first canto and seventh canto. And Krishna, this way you appear in various forms, like that of a human being, sage, demigod, fish, or other creatures, to protect the pious people and destroy the enemies of the earth. O great personality, in Kali Yuga you will appear in a covered incarnation to preach the chanting of the holy names, which is a prescribed method for attaining perfection in Kali Yuga. That is why one of your names is Triyuga Avatar, Triyuga, because topics of your covered incarnation are not generally disclosed by the scriptures. So after this whole long list of incarnations is described in the first canto, chapter 3, verses 6 through 27, then Vyasadeva concludes that discussion with 1.3.28, which is a very important verse, 1.3.28. Which describes, there's all these different incarnations. There's Krishna, there's Balaram, there's Dasavatar, Nisringa, Buddha, Parasram, Ram, etc. Ramachandra is also there. Parasram is there, Ram is there, Buddha is there, all these different incarnations which you heard, Rishabhadev, Narad, Kumaras. Then he says, now of all these, who is the supreme, who is the origin? Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Ete cham shakala pumsa, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Indrayu vakyam mule ridyanti muge yuge yuge. So he says, this is 1.3.28, of all the incarnations, Lord Krishna is the supreme source. Among all these 22 incarnations that I've just mentioned, and counting Lord Chaitanya, who's hidden, that's 23, they're all plenary portions or portions of the plenary portion. Of course, that doesn't count for Lord Chaitanya. But the 22 that he actually lists specifically, they're all plenary portions or portions of the plenary portion of the Purusha incarnation. Many of them are empowered incarnations. But Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. This should be especially remembered. In every yuga, they maintain the living entities who are tortured by the demons. So that brings us to the conclusion of the fourth ray of Bhagavat Arkamarichi Mala, which describes the Bhagavat Tattva, the science of the Lord's characteristics. So we heard about the Lord's identity. We heard about his how we understand the absolute truth in three phases. He's the source of all different kinds of energies, spiritual, material energies. And you can't understand the Lord just with your intellect. Only by devotion and surrender can you understand this amazing Lord. And all the powerful demigods are actually all empowered by him, and they're dependent on him. And there's a material world with living entities, and also a spiritual world of living entities. And then there's Krishna Loka, the spiritual planet, which is free from all these problems. And then the Lord comes in this world in different incarnations. And the most wonderful incarnation of Kali Yuga, who has saved all of us, is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now this chapter describes, we did in a summary way, Bhagavat Tattva, the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His identity, his energies, his spiritual abode, his material abode, and then his role as the liberator, as the merciful expression of his love for living entities by coming here in various incarnations. So tomorrow we'll discuss the fifth ray, which is the science of the Lord's energies, which is called Shakti Tattva.